The Obama administration is announcing with this event a series of new investments that federal agencies and departments are making in research and development related to big data. And that term embraces not just the enormous volume of data that can be found today in a growing number of databases, but also the variety of those data and the velocity of their generation. I'm joined by a number of the administration science and technology leaders who will be describing the specifics of some of those investments in just a minute, and I will introduce them in a moment. Following their brief presentations, we'll have a few minutes of questions, and then some of the federal officials here will need to leave. Some will join the audience, and we will turn to a panel of experts from industry and academia to discuss some of the implications of the big data revolution. We're very happy to have as a moderator of that panel Steve Lohr of the New York Times, who has written very wisely about this important new trend, including in this morning's paper. And we're grateful to him and the other panelists from academia and industry for being here. But before I turn things over to my colleagues, I want to say just a few words about why big data, the big data issue, has emerged as an administration priority, what we see as the appropriate roles for the federal government, and how industries, universities, and nonprofit organizations might get involved further in this domain in the future. I think, as everybody in this audience probably knows, the world is now generating zettabytes. That's 10 to the 21st power, or billion trillion bytes, of information every year, and that number is growing with extraordinary speed. These data are being generated by remote sensors, by online retail transactions, text documents, email messages, video images, computers running large-scale simulations, and scientific instruments, including particle accelerators and telescopes, both on Earth and in space. Recently, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, PCAST, concluded in a report for the President that the federal government is underinvesting in R&D related to collecting, storing, preserving, managing, analyzing, and sharing these increasing quantities of data. Obviously, it's not the data per se that create value. What really matters is our ability to derive from them new insights, to recognize relationships, to make increasingly accurate predictions, our ability, that is, to move from data to knowledge to action. As we looked at that issue in the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy following the release of the PCAST report, it became clear that there really was a strong case to be made for a national big data initiative that multiple agencies would contribute to. The advantages of such a cross-government focus on big data are numerous. One, the domain of big data is going to be important, we're sure, from an economic point of view. It's driving the creation of new IT products and services, boosting the productivity of firms, figuring out how to use big data to make better decisions, and more. Second, advances in big data are critical to accelerating the pace of discovery in many different domains of science and engineering. Think about genomics, where firms are seriously talking about sequencing the whole genomes of a million people or more, or astronomy, where astronomers and the public at large now have access to virtual observatories containing hundreds of millions of celestial objects. Third, working with big data has the potential to help address many major national challenges: national security, health, the environment, education, to name some of them. Some hospitals are already using big data to reduce rates of rehospitalization. Startups are developing online courses that get better the more students that use them. These kinds of applications are dependent on being able to make the most of the information that we and the rest of the world are generating every day. Although the private sector will clearly take the lead in developing big data-related products and services, the government can play an important role by supporting long-term R&D, investing in a big data workforce, using big data approaches to make progress on key national challenges, increasing access to the government's own data, and shaping policy on crucial issues such as privacy. That's why last year, under the auspices of the National Science and Technology Council, OSTP chartered an interagency committee on big data. That committee, co-chaired by representatives from the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes of Health, has already identified concrete actions that agencies can take, some of which are being announced today, to advance the state of the art in big data technologies and to harness big data to solve important problems in science, health, education, environment, national security, and more. I'm confident that these and other agencies will be making additional investments in the months ahead. Finally, I want to challenge industry, research universities, and nonprofits to join with the administration to make the most of the extraordinary opportunities being created by big data. This is not something the government can do by itself, wants to do by itself. We need what the president calls the all-hands-on-deck approach to have this domain realize its enormous potential. Some companies are already sponsoring big data-related competitions and providing funding for university research. Universities are beginning to create new courses and entire courses of study, for that matter, to prepare the next generation of data scientists. Organizations like Data Without Borders are helping nonprofits by providing pro bono data collection, analysis, and visualization. OSTP would be very interested indeed in supporting the creation of a forum to highlight new public-private partnerships related to big data. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our speakers. I'm going to introduce them all at once. In order of presentation, we have with us today, starting on my immediate left, Subra Suresh, the director of the National Science Foundation, Francis Collins, the director of the National Institutes of Health, Marcia McNutt, the director of the United States Geological Survey, Zach Lemnios, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Research and Engineering, Ken Gabriel, Acting Director of the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, known to the world as DARPA, and Bill Brinkman, Director of the Department of Energy's Office of Science. I do want to recognize one person you'll be seeing later as well. Tom Khalil, our Deputy Director for Policy at OSTP, has been the spark plug driving this initiative forward, and we're really all here because of Tom's extraordinary work. So thank you, Tom. Let me now turn to Subra Suresh and start with thanks to you, Subra, and your team at NSF for your leadership on big data, as well as many other administration science and technology priorities. Subra.
Thank you, John. As John mentioned, science gathers data from not only experiments and very sophisticated instrumentation, but also from theoretical calculations, modeling, simulations at an ever-increasing rate across all scales, across all complexities. At NSF, it happens across all fields of science and engineering. At NSF, we recognize that data are motivating a profound transformation in the culture and conduct of science. So we've seen that data increasingly serve as the primary driver for discovery and for decision making. So NSF has been a very proud leader in supporting the fundamental science and infrastructure that underlies data and enables the big data revolution. In the 1980s, we supported the first high-performance computing centers. Now we are supporting the next generation. Just a few months ago, NSF put in place the Blue Waters computer structure, computer infrastructure at the University of Illinois, which is one of the most powerful supercomputers in the world, capable of quadrillions of calculations per second. It just opened up access to research teams 2 weeks ago. And the National Center for Atmospheric Research, Wyoming Supercomputer Center, will officially inaugurate in October of this year. That's another milestone in our commitment. And just last month, we articulated a new vision and a five-pronged strategy for what we call advanced computing infrastructure, what used to be called high-performance computing. And this is something that we are very committed to. Today, I'm really pleased on behalf of my colleagues from NSF to announce seven new efforts. The first one will involve a joint effort between NSF and NIH. NSF and NIH have joined together in collaboration in the critical area of core techniques and technologies for advancing big data science and engineering. So I would like to particularly thank my colleague and good friend Francis Collins and his team for working with us in making this announcement possible. What we are calling the Big Data Solicitation that will be released today will enable researchers to develop new knowledge from large data sets. The program will develop and evaluate new algorithms and methods, technologies and tools for improved data collection and management, data analytics, and greater collaboration across all science and engineering disciplines. Second, in addition to this cross-agency solicitation, I'm delighted to announce a $10 million Expeditions in Computing Award to researchers at the University of California at Berkeley. Their team will undertake a complete rethinking of data analysis, integrating algorithms, machines, and people to develop new ways to turn data into knowledge and insight. Number three, we're announcing a $1.2 million award that will bring together statisticians and biologists to develop network models and automatic, scalable algorithms and tools to tell us more about protein structures and biological pathways. NSF has embarked aggressively on focused cross-foundation efforts to address challenges and seize opportunities that big data-enabled science affords. This has been framed internally as part of what we call Cyber Infrastructure Framework for the 21st Century, or CIF-21. The fourth announcement that I would like to make today under the CIF-21 framework involves the first round of awards made through NSF's EarthCube program. These awards will support transformative approaches to integrate data from disparate locations and sources and with eclectic structures and formats, laying the foundation to achieve community-guided cyber infrastructure for the geosciences. We are calling on members of the geosciences community to use data citation to increase opportunities for the use and analysis of data sets. This exemplifies NSF's commitment to responsible stewardship and sustainability of data resulting from federally funded research. Number five, to continue NSF's lead role in educating and supporting the next generation of the best and brightest scientists and engineers, we are announcing our intent to institute a new CIF-21 track under what we call IGERT, which stands for Integrative Graduate Education and Research Traineeship Program. This investment will prepare future researchers to address fundamental challenges in big data science and engineering. Number six, we are announcing an opportunity for students in a $2 million research training group award. This award will support training for undergraduates to use graphical and visualization techniques for complex data. And last but not least, we are announcing today an anticipated community opportunity for our research communities, including social scientists, to participate in what is called an Ideas Lab. This involves many NSF directorates and offices and what we internally call our One NSF vision. This is a creative forum that will explore ways in which big data may be transformed to knowledge and then to action to enhance the effectiveness of teaching and learning environments. As you can see, NSF's data-driven efforts are bold, cross-disciplinary, cross-foundational, and cross-governmental. We hope that this work we do today will lay the groundwork for new enterprises and fortify the foundations for U.S. competitiveness for decades to come. Thank you so much.
We Good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure for me as the director of the National Institutes of Health to be here with you this afternoon. And we're proud to be part of this new initiative that Subra, my friend, just described to you, this joint effort between NSF and NIH to provide a solicitation for bold ideas in the management of big data. There might have been a time where biologists were considered to be small data people, with laboratories cranking out relatively modest volumes of information because that was all we had the ability to do, perhaps 30 or 40 years ago with the tools available. We have now arrived in the big time, and we are capable, in fact, of producing data sets that are daunting in terms of their complexity, their size, and the need for analysis. And so we are thrilled to join with our colleagues to tackle this whole set of issues that's being highlighted today. And I'd like to say particular thanks to Karen Remington of NIH, who's played a significant role in helping us think through how we might make the most of this announcement. Today's technological advances are clearly driving our kind of science, and since I come out of the field of genomics, it won't surprise you that I will use that as an example. The average cost of sequencing an entire genome has fallen from $400 million when the first one was completed in 2003 to less than $8,000 today, and there are two companies that have announced an intent to make it possible to sequence an entire genome in 24 hours. For less than $1,000 in the near future. So this is a wonderful opportunity, but also a real challenge in terms of data management. So actually, I'm glad to make an announcement this afternoon of something which just went up on our website a few minutes ago in terms of a new collaboration to try to deal with some of the magnitude of the data that's being produced. And that is announcing that NHGRI, the National Human Genome Research Institute, working with the National Center for Biotechnology Information and the European Bioinformatics Institute, has formed a collaboration with Amazon to put data from the 1,000 Genomes Project up on the cloud. Now, this is a project which aims ultimately to sequence not 1,000 genomes, but about 2,700. Already 1,700 of those are in hand. And I can tell you it has been a challenge for all of the users that would like access to this information, which is being made freely available. That was the point of doing the project, to actually be able to get that access just because of the difficulty in transferring it. This is 200 terabytes of data. In sort of simple visual terms, that's 16 million file cabinets worth, or more than 30,000 DVDs. So not the sort of thing you want to have to ship or carry across town to your collaborator. So having this up in the cloud is going to provide, I think, substantial advantages to users who want access for the data, and we're delighted to have, after a couple of years of working hard on this, being able now to announce this collaboration with Amazon. This is going to provide also, as a launching pad for many other kinds of data types, opportunities to deal with those in a more facile way, and that will include data which will be coming forward and already is in very large quantities from the Cancer Genome Atlas. Cancer is, after all, a disease of the genome. It comes about because of errors in DNA sequence, and now the Cancer Genome Atlas project is on the brink of producing effectively 22,000 human genome sequences in order to understand exactly what are the driving mutations in the 20 most common cancers. And anybody working in cancer wants access to that data, and so you can see how important it is to us to get control of this big data circumstance. We also recognize the great need for tools to facilitate the analysis, sharing, and management of data of all sorts, and there are some other things to briefly mention. The National Centers for Biomedical Computing, the NCBCs, supported through the Common Fund. This includes various projects. I'll mention one, I2B2, which is Informatics for Integrating Biology and the Bedside, which seeks to create tools and approaches that make it possible for clinical and biomedical research data to be effectively exchanged. And then the Neuroscience Information Framework, recognizing that the brain is perhaps the most daunting and most exciting of our coming frontiers, one needs a dynamic inventory of web-based neuroscience resources that provide opportunities for data discovery and sharing, and that's what this Neuroscience Information Framework provides. So we at NIH recognize that the data deluge will only continue to increase with more technological advances. That's why we're really pleased that Tom Khalil and John Holdren and OSTP have highlighted this and brought together all of my colleagues here to figure out how we can work in a way that accepts the challenge, embraces the challenge of the Big Data Initiative in order to make the most of the science that we all support. So we look forward to the continued collaborations that are possible through this effort, and delighted to have a chance to be part of this afternoon's events. Thank you very much.
Well, good afternoon. The USGS collects big data on water, earthquakes, geology, climate, biology in the Earth's natural landscapes. In fact, so much big data that we're in danger of drowning in data while starving for understanding. Bucking that trend is USGS's John Wesley Powell Center for Analysis and Synthesis. And today I'd like to tell you more about what this innovative center is doing to help scientists come together in our beautiful center in Fort Collins, Colorado, to gather meaning from that large amount of data by bringing together uncommon bedfellows of scientists, by bringing together economists, social scientists, biologists, geophysicists, brought from within government and outside of government to tackle the kinds of problems that are literally the headlines of today by using existing data and rich computational resources. They employ new technology to mine, share, and integrate existing data in order to solve those problems and make rapid progress in science. It is a proposal-driven process through peer review that projects are selected for the John Wesley Powell Center. There is currently a process open to select new projects for next year that will close on April 30th, and I'll also be announcing the selected proposals for next year that I'm going to announce today. But perhaps by giving you an example of some of the ongoing projects now and some of our recent successes, you'll get an idea of what the John Wesley Powell Center does. For example, we all know that one of the biggest problems we face today is trying to understand our uncertain climate future. And we understand that climate models can be a big part of that climate future. But any climate model is only as good as its ability to predict our climate past. But if a climate model can only predict the climate past to within a couple degrees because the climate past is only known to a couple degrees, because our ability to reconstruct past climate situations is only good to a couple degrees, we can't trust that projection into the future to any better than a couple degrees. So a group came together at the Powell Center and used a variety of data from the Earth's paleoclimate record to put together the most precise reconstruction of the Pliocene thermal optimum ever produced, which is now going to be the standard against which all climate models are now run, so that in the future we can predict future climate much better than ever before. Another example of an ongoing study at the Powell Center is one on hydraulic fracturing and water resources. This is again a subject of current headlines, where people want to know how much water is used in hydraulic fracturing, and is this making a major dent in my local water supply? What is the truth versus the hype in terms of impacts on water quality? And how can I be sure that my current water supply is not going to be impacted? This is a study that the Powell Center is undertaking. And now for the announcement of the 2012 proposal selections. Eight proposals were selected, And I should add that for this round, not only are these proposals being supported by the U.S. Geological Survey, but some are also being supported by the National Science Foundation. Project number one, Climate Change and Ecohydrology in Temperate Dryland Ecosystems, a Global Assessment. Number two, Understanding and Managing for Resilience in the Face of Global Change. Number three, Modeling Species Response to Environmental Change, Development of Integrated, Scalable Bayesian Models of Population Persistence. Number four, Mercury Cycling, Bioaccumulation, and Risk Across Western North America. Number five, the distribution of fibrous eronite in U.S., implications for human health. Six, global probabilistic modeling of earthquake recurrence rates and maximum magnitude. Seven, the transport of dissolved organic matter by river networks, a reexamination of the role of flow across temporal and spatial scales. And eight, the next generation of ecological indicators defining which microbial properties matter most to ecosystem function and how to measure them. So thank you very much, and we're very proud to be part of this big data initiative.
Well, good afternoon. I want to start by, John, thanking you for inviting us and Tom from a discussion we had, I think, at dinner maybe 18 months ago. You've inspired us all to think about big data in some very new and exciting ways. I'm Zach Lemnios. I'm the Assistant Secretary for Defense Research and Engineering. And today the Department of Defense is placing a big bet on big data. We intend to change the game and plan to be the first to demonstrate and use autonomous and secure peer-to-peer systems across the full scope of military operations. For example, we are within sight of a new generation of systems that understand and interpret the real world with computer speed, computer precision, and human agility. These systems will not only be central to helping our commanders and analysts make sense out of the huge volumes of data our military sensors collect, they will also support multiple missions. We see an opportunity to build truly autonomous systems that go well beyond tethered joysticks. These systems will be agile. They will maneuver and understand their environment. They will make decisions by themselves, and they will know when they can and can't and when to call upon a human. We see a revolution emerging in harnessing and utilizing massive data in very new ways through data analytics and prognosis. The modern discipline of data to decision has the potential to bring together sensing, perception, and decision support in new ways that will make truly autonomous systems possible. This vision is not just a fantasy. Since the invention of the integrated circuit in 1959 with its single germanium transistor, three resistors and a capacitor, to processors that are embedded in today's cell phones with billions of transistors, no technology has had greater impact or scale. Information technology is at the core of our defense system. It's at the core of the world's banking sector, our health systems, and commerce. It runs our businesses, and it's embedded throughout our private lives. The Department of Defense funded much of this early work, including the very first integrated high-speed circuit, the circuit design tools that are used today, key advances in materials technology, and many of the manufacturing processes that are used globally in our manufacturing foundries. The department's continued investments in 3D electronics, exascale computing, and photonics are sure to extend this legacy even further. And as exciting as this foundation is, the revolution beyond Moore's Law lies in how we employ computation, how we employ that capacity, and the capability to use data that's being generated. And that's the big data challenge. The remarkable results of the DARPA Urban Challenge, the NASA Robonaut, the IBM Watson Jeopardy Champ, and everybody has it, the iPhone Siri application, are just a start. It's a remarkable transition from those early concepts of just a few years ago to concepts that are now starting to emerge in our daily lives. The Department of Defense has started down this path with a major push in data to decision, autonomy, and human system. And our piece of this is, in fact, coupling those three domains. In data to decision, we seek efficient representation of structured and unstructured data in multiple formats. And we need dynamic reasoning and inference engines that can learn from experience with very little training and understand the limits of their knowledge. In autonomy, we will leverage the data to decision work and will also seek new data to decision support tools that can recognize trends, adapt to the real world without relying on human intervention. And all of this must be within a secure framework where the trust is in the data and the human trust in the system is maintained throughout the entire process to the end application. In the area of human systems, we need new interfaces that will enable systems to communicate very naturally and allow users to seamlessly collaborate and reason with their data. In 1950, Alan Turing proposed such a concept. Across the department, there are approximately 80 programs representing about $250 million annually in this investment area. And of these, approximately $60 million are in new initiatives across 20 open solicitations. Information on these solicitations is available at a new website that's been launched called defenseinnovationmarketplace.mil, collapsed to one word. This website's been created to better communicate the department's investment priorities and the opportunities that we see for industry and, most importantly, academia. We're looking for a generation of new ideas and accelerated progress across a broad range of performers. We are planning a series of prize competitions in targeted areas, which will be announced over the next several months. And we will use business models and make it easier for the small business community, for universities, and for our laboratories to work together as teams. The department is indeed placing a big bet on big data, and we need your ideas. Thank you.
Seeing farther and better has been a critical defensive capability since the dawn of time. When we lived in caves, that capability may have come from a guy named Craig, who just climbed up a tree to get a better look. Later, it was telescopes and observation balloons. In recent decades, the DoD's intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance assets, such as radar systems and imaging satellites, have provided and continue to provide unprecedented situational awareness and advantage for our warfighters and national security. Increasingly, though, the terrain we need to survey, the horizons we need to scan, the things we need to see are including bits and bytes in mountains and oceans of data. The data being brought to bear in support of DoD operations is growing rapidly in both volume and complexity. From scraps of paper and hard drives to overhead imagery and signal intercepts, the data collected is often imperfect, incomplete, and heterogeneous. This trend is further accelerated by the proliferation of various digital devices and the internet, all of which are used by our adversaries to operate and hide in this data terrain. The sheer volume of information itself is also creating a background clutter, which makes it increasingly hard to detect and identify the data that we need to see. John mentioned exabytes. I was looking at that myself, and I'm trying to get a sense of just how big exabytes are. Just how big is big data? So let me put this into context. The Atlantic Ocean is roughly 350 million cubic kilometers in volume, or nearly 100 billion gallons of water. If each gallon of water represented a byte or character, the Atlantic Ocean would be able to store, just barely, all the data generated by the world in 2010. Looking for a specific message or a page in a document would be the equivalent of searching the Atlantic Ocean for a single 55-gallon drum barrel. So the DOD needs new fundamental approaches to big data analytics that match the needs of diverse users, are adaptable to changing missions, and perform on the timescales that match operational tempos. So DARPA has announced the X Data program today. It's about a $25 million a year program over 4 years. The BAA was announced today. And with that program and others, we seek the equivalent of radar and overhead imagery for big data to provide the DOD rapid, comprehensive, and sound navigation of this information terrain. Thank you.
Well, first I'd like to thank John Holdren and OSTP for bringing us together today and highlighting what has certainly been a critical research area for us at the Department of Energy and the Office of Science, namely the area of big data. For many years, one of our roles within the federal science funding community, and one of which we are quite proud, has been supporting the construction and operation of major scientific user facilities across the DOE National Laboratories. These facilities include massive particle accelerators, large-scale X-ray light sources, neutron scattering sources, and some of the world's fastest supercomputers, and advanced facilities for nanoscience and systems biology, among other things. More than 26,000 researchers across the nation and from universities, government laboratories, and industry make use of these facilities each year. In fact, one of the interesting things about the facilities is that American industry is increasingly taking advantage of these facilities to help define new products and reduce development time very substantially. Today, these advanced facilities are generating unprecedented amounts of data. Single experiments conducted at our user facilities can produce terabytes of data per day. Experiments at the Large Hadron Collider in CERN are estimated to generate terabytes of data per second. In fact, it has to reject something like 10 to the third, one in 1,000 a piece of data each nanosecond. Standard output from one climate model in the Intercomparison Project can run into tens of terabits today, and climate data constitutes the fastest-growing data collection for DOE supercomputing facilities. The climate community expects that data sets collectively will be hundreds of exabytes by 2020. These massive data sets have become increasingly challenging to our scientists to store, share, analyze, and understand. Partly because of this growing challenge, we have long been a leading supporter of the Office of Science of innovative research in the management and analysis of extreme-scale scientific data. Previous efforts have resulted in the development of widely used data management, storage, and visualization technologies. Two examples are the high-performance storage system, archival file system that is used across supercomputing, and the FastBit data indexing technology used by a major internet search engine today and a winner of the 2008 R&D 100 award. Today, I'm extremely pleased to announce an innovative new program in this area to aid the nation's scientific community in managing new data-rich environment. Our Office of Advanced Scientific Computing is launching a new scalable Data Management Analysis and Visualization Institute, which will develop new and existing technologies for big data. The Data Institute will partner with other Office of Science-supported research teams to ensure that the best and most up-to-date technologies are used throughout our research program. This institute was chosen on the basis of peer review and national competition. It will be led by distinguished computer scientist Ari Yoshani of Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory. It will bring together leading computer scientists, mathematicians, and programming experts from the 6 national laboratories and 7 universities. It will assist researchers across a range of fields making use of DOE supercomputing resources to probe and mine their data for new discoveries. I am pleased to say that several of the members of the Data Institute are here today, including the Deputy Director, another distinguished computer scientist, Dr. Robert Ross of the Argonne National Laboratory. I'd like to thank Ari and Rob and their team for all their efforts. We look forward to their leadership in this area. And again, we are grateful to OSTP and the AAAS for bringing us together today.